It's easy to forget what our program is. This is Dr. Herbert Albiotti, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. Might as well say thought for today, or instant illumination, or absolute philosophy, or whatever opening we have on our series, because we haven't been getting them on as we wanted to, because we've had many little interruptions with our machinery. So, following directions and doing a program is a very difficult thing, and people find doing it very difficult. And the reason they find it difficult is because it doesn't always come in the same guise. It doesn't always come in the same clothing. And we sometimes forget. Now, when you are in school, the teacher says, "You are in school." And you say, "Yes, teacher, we know that. We can see the school building. We're sitting in our stools, in our chairs. We're doing these things because we're in school." And the teacher says, "All right, then, how are you supposed to act in school?" "Well, we're supposed to pay attention." "Well, what does that mean, pay attention?" "We're supposed to pay attention to what the teacher is saying." "And what does it mean to pay attention to what the teacher is saying?" "It means that we at all times recognize that the teacher is a teacher, and at all times the teacher is teaching us, and whatever the teacher has to say to us, it has something to do with what we are learning. It is not just some frivolous thing that she is saying off the top of her head for no reason at all. Everything is said with a purpose, and everything is said with a result that should come from it, you know. My, you are very brilliant. You are a very brilliant child, you know." "Now, that's right, because I'm listening to you, and I'm just taking right off the top here." "That's good." Okay, now, where do we find teachers? We find teachers in schools. We find teachers in nature. Have you ever been taught? Sylvia was taught this morning. She was in the pond. She's in the pool. And as she was in the pool, she felt a scratch in her back. And she thought, you know, some little thing must be itching her. And she reached down to push it away and push it away a couple times. And finally she looked down, and here's a little frog. And the frog had jumped into the swimming pool, and he's trying to climb up on Sylvia to get out, you know. And Sylvia was a little too straight up for it, and it couldn't hang on. So Sylvia nicely takes the little frog and puts it on the edge of the pool so it can go. No, she didn't kiss it like she should have, because it would have been her prince, you know. And she didn't want a prince. She wants to have independent wealth and a perfect ideal of spirit, mind, and body, and that sort of stuff, you know. But, okay, so she put the frog on the edge of the pool, and the frog instantly taught her a lesson. And it jumped back in the pool. And she thought to herself, "Well, now, why do I put the frog on the edge of the pool if he's going to jump back in the pool?" And the frog was saying, "He wants to do his own thing. He wants to do his own thing. And he is not the slightest bit concerned that the pool water is not salubrious for him, and he could very well succumb to the pool and just be another dead frog in the pool. And we wouldn't think a thing about it, except we'd fish him out and throw him off on the lawn so he could become part of the fertilizer for the lawn." But what was the frog trying to teach you? The frog was teaching you that you were not of a perfect, clear mind. If you had been of a pure mind, the pool would have been pure yours. The pool would have been totally yours. There would have been nothing in that pool except you and your beautiful body and your beautiful enjoyment of it. And there would be no bugs in there, no crickets in there. There would be no people who jump in there and nobody who's bothering you. And the vibrations of the water would not be too strong for your skin. Everything would just be ideal. Now, was that the idea you went into the pool with?
Yes.
Thank you, my God. You went into the pool with the idea that the pool was going to be perfect, right?
Yes.
Did you find it that way?
Yes.
Until the frog came.
Oh, it was perfect too.
No. And then you threw, if it was perfect, why didn't you leave the frog in the pool? Why'd you throw him out? Because you knew he didn't want to be in the pool. At least you didn't want him in the pool. The frog wanted to be in the pool, so he jumped back in again. Now, did you throw him out a second time?
No.
See, you let him alone. And you were not master of the pool because you did not say, this is my pool. And Mr. Frog, I will be out of here in about 10 minutes. You can have it all to yourself, you know. But while I'm in here, I want this all to myself. This is my personal private pool, you know. But again, the frog was teaching you a lesson. Ellen, what's our sign over there? It's not there. That is not there.
To be, you are not
being.
Ellen?
Ellen, you are 45.
Yeah, but you are not being tested, you are being 45.
Well, if you say you, already.
Ellen?
Yes.
Just because a frog jumps into your pure pool and messes it up for you, you don't let that bother you.
Right.
You just pop the frog out and you come out with the correct statement. Now, Ellen, earlier I said some statement. I said, Ellen, what are you doing? And, or what did I say?
What is the paste for a bee sting?
What is the remedy for a bee sting? For a person or a dog. And so Ellen says, oh, it's already done. It's already healed. It's already taken care of. And now...
Now, do you know the paste of a...
Do you know? No. Ellen put a paste on her dog because her dog got a bee sting, she thought. And I said, Ellen, do you know what the remedy is for the bee sting? And she said, it's already done. It's already complete. Now, you see, as a teacher, I was fortifying her with the opportunity to stand firm on answering the question. Ellen, are you a girl or are you a boy? I'm neither. I'm both. Oh, how about that? Hmm. Ellen, what are you out picturing, a girl or a boy? I'm out picturing both. Well, how interesting. Ellen, which do you prefer to be, a girl or a boy? Well, I prefer to be both. Well... Very good. If that is true, Ellen, don't ever expect me to treat you like a girl, and don't ever expect me to treat you like a boy, because I don't know how to treat a hermaphrodite. I don't know how to treat a person who has no sex, who has no, gender to them, you know. And so a woman I treat with respect and love and gentleness. A man I treat with respect and love and gentleness, but each a different way. A woman I treat with gentle respect and love and gentleness. And a man I treat with firm respect, love, and gentleness. Now, why do I treat a man that way? Because a man expects to be treated that way. Or at least I expect that a man expects to be treated that way. And how do I expect a woman to be treated? I expect, I'm old-fashioned in this, I think a woman is a woman, and that she bears our babies. She is a very sensitive, loving, caring person. She has a lot of tenderness, and she has a lot of gentleness to her. And a man, generally speaking, is a little tougher. He can tough through things, he can handle things. He's the one who lifts the weights, you know. He's the one who does the heavy-duty stuff around the house or around anywhere, and that's just generally, but that's not always the case. One of our students wrote in today or called yesterday and talked to Ellen and said that he didn't have a job for a while, so he babysat the children at home and he just loved it. And his wife had a job and she enjoyed doing her work. And so they didn't mind having this different arrangement that than one normally sees. I don't want to say a normal arrangement, but then one normally sees. And so then Ellen tells me that he added to that statement, now my wife is pregnant with the third child, and she says she thinks she'll stay home now with all three of them, and then I have to go to work. Mm-hmm. So, but that's okay. That's their choice. That's their world. Now, what lesson is he learning from that? He is learning that it's perfectly okay to be a daddy, mom, a mama, dad, or whatever you call it, you know. And she is learning that it's perfectly okay to be the wage earner. And they're learning that it's perfectly okay to switch roles now and then and to do these things in a harmonious, beautiful way. That's perfectly okay. And this is part of the learning situation. What I'm saying to you and what I'm trying to say more than anything else this morning is that your teacher will appear in many areas. And just because you're at the beach playing with your teacher and you're doing volleyball with your teacher or something, and this is your teacher who is your teacher in spiritual things, that doesn't mean that the teacher is not teaching you something each time the teacher hits the ball. Each time the teacher shows you grace, shows you a way to do things. Each time a teacher says, what's your name? Why do you ask my name? You know my name. You blew it. The teacher asks you stupid questions because you always give a straight, honorable answer, and you don't judge why the teacher is asking the question. The minute you judge why the teacher is asking the question, you've lost the learning situation. You've lost your ability to be fortified and strengthened in your conviction. So, we were watching Kate and Leopold, the movie, and Leopold is a newcomer in the 21st century. And as he is there, he is walking the dog. And as he walks the dog does its duty, which is normal for the dog to do its duty. And Leopold watches and then begins to walk away. And the policewoman comes along and says, pick it up. Or no, are you going to pick it up? And Leopold says, that is beyond my ken, why you would ask me to pick it up, you know. And of course, that's not the right answer. When a police person asks you anything, you answer it straightforward. And you're going to board the aircraft. And you laughingly say, well, I've got a couple of tons of ammunition in my belt here, you know. And immediately they call the guards. They don't take that as a joke. They take that as full. They don't want you to say, well, of course I haven't got any rifles. I've only got knives, you know. Or, of course, I don't have this. I only have a hand grenade or something. Well, you know, there are no jokes when it comes to speaking the truth. There are no jokes at any time. In any way, there aren't. And so when the people at the gate, when you're going to board the airplane, say to you, do you have anything that you shouldn't have, any sharp instruments, you don't say yes, unless you do, you know. And, of course, you shouldn't. But you don't have it. Because you know that answer has to be right, and they tell you, do not joke. Do not say something just to be cute, you know. And this is something that we all tend to do, is to be cute. And that's not the purpose. And I say, Ellen, what is your name? Herb Byerly. I have been with you now 30 years, and you don't know my name? What's the matter with you, Herb? What are you trying to do? Herb, you are so stupid. Herb, how come you can be a teacher and be so stupid, you know? And I say, Ellen, what is your name? You just told me my name is Ellen. No, I said, Ellen, what is your name? I'm saying, I want you to tell me what your name is. And aren't you proud of your name? Of course I am. Well, what is your name? Well, you know what it is. Well, how long must I have this little diatribe going on here until you finally come through to recognize that I want you to answer questions in exactly the same way that they're asked? Ellen, what is your name?
Ellen Yamini.
Very good. Very good. Sylvia, what's your name?
Sylvia Maria Enns.
My God. And Dodie, what's your name?
Oh, Dorothea Ruth Zimmerman.
And Rex, what's your name?
Rex Leonard Byerly.
Oh, Leonard, huh? All right. Now, Ingeborg, finally we get to the top of the pile here. What's your name?
My name is Ingeborg. No.
That's nice. Now, you see, she thinks she's being cute. She thinks she's being cute by saying her name is Ingeborg. And so she's missing the opportunity to pass the test and to learn the lesson. Now, her name is Ingeborg. That's true. Now, if all of you had only used your first name, then she would have been correct. But when any of you use your full name, then she must use her full name if she's going to do it. But because she is mentally incompetent, she doesn't remember her full name, and so she cannot give it to us. But that's okay. If she doesn't, when she gets her competence back, she may tell us what her full name is. Now, you see how important it is to answer the question fully and completely? And you see how being cute is not what the teacher wants. What's 2 times 2?
4.
And you say, well, teacher, don't you know? Are you stupid? You know, 2 times 2 is 4. Everybody knows that. You're so stupid, teacher. You know, what happens? The kid doesn't learn anything. He doesn't learn. He should learn humility. He should learn always to answer questions. Always. 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 Now, J.J. was in prison, and the prison guard said to him, is that hat altered? And J.J. gave the answer he had to give, I don't know. And so the prison guard looked it over and carefully, yes, this hat's been altered, we're confiscating it. Which means he may have pulled it a little tighter so it fit his head, because it was too loose when he got it, or something like that, but that's altered. Now, he could have said, yes, it's been altered, and it's been approved by the captain, and he had to make sure that it was approved. It's approved by the captain because it came and it was too big for me, and so I had to have it taken in, or I had to sew it in a little bit like this, and the captain says that was okay, and it's okay as an altered hat. Well, then he'd be all right. Now, he knows he's in the prison. He knows that they are teaching him in the prison. Is that hat altered? And he should answer, yes, with the captain's approval, it's altered. You see? Yes, it's altered. And then, if necessary, he adds anything, but yes. But when he says, I don't know, then that means that quite likely he has done something improper with it to alter it without permission. Now, you say, well, boy, that's pretty petty stuff. My dears, my angels, my innocent ones, do you know what a damn difficult time it is to think of things to teach with? Do you realize how difficult it is? Do you realize, Ellen, do you realize how difficult it is to have 10 people here on campus and figure out things for them to do while they're here so they're not going to be bored? Teaching them to mow the lawn, teaching them to pick up sticks, teaching them to bring in firewood, teaching them to wash the windows, teaching them to do, and not be touched by it. You don't need those windows washed. You don't need those sticks brought in. When there's nobody here, everything gets done perfectly beautifully. You understand that?
Yes.
You see, so your attitude has to be, this is just part of our teaching program here. You are given responsibilities, not because they have to be done, because they don't have to be done. If if Sylvia never sets another gist in her life, it won't matter one little bit. If the gist never comes out again, it won't matter one little bit. If the gist comes out, wonderful. If Rex is loved, that's wonderful. If Rex is not loved, he'll love himself. You know, he doesn't look outside himself for appreciation or anything like that. Oh, if I'm going to bend over, he knows I'm going to give him a hug, and he'll stand there, and then when I'm done hugging him, he'll stand there to make sure he's got it all, you know, that there's not some more that's coming. But he doesn't need it. And it is very difficult, damn difficult, to come up with ideas for people who come to visit us on campus to give them something to do so that they don't feel like they're just doing nothing here. Well, now you go walk the meditation path. I don't feel like walking. Well, you go pick up sticks in the air. I don't feel like doing that. Well, you go work in the garden. I don't feel like it. Well, you sit down here and you collate the booklet. I don't feel like that. I'm not your slave, you know. I'm not your slave. One woman says, I clean houses for a living, and then you ask me to clean a house here? And we say, please go home. Please go home. If you don't want to do the few little things that we ask you to do as a learning situation, as a you're in school. And you're being taught by the teacher, and the teacher is giving you these things, and you have to have the humility to take it. So when I say, Ellen, what was in the material you put on Little Elf for the bee sting? I didn't say it that way. I said, what was the, did you put it on? However I said it. And but she didn't answer it. She just answered it with the second area of the question. It is done, not what was done. So all of you and all of us, we must remember, life is a great big school. And if we can realize that everything is our teacher and everybody is our teacher, and to deal with them with respect and with love and with honor, we'll have magical things happening. But if we don't, then we really aren't worth the salt that we're made for. Because we're here to be ourselves and have fun. But you have chosen to come to school here to learn and grow and expand. And just like you, Dorothea, you have agreed to take the course of the University of Healing, but it's not really in your heart. It's not really something that turns you on and makes you feel happy, and so you're not doing it. And we have students who have been with us for, like JJ, he's in prison for 20-some years or better, and almost 30 years, and he's been taking our course. Now first, he's beginning to do some of the work, and now first, his whole prison attitude is changing. His whole prison life is changing. The officers look at him with respect, because he looks at himself with respect now. He's doing the lessons and doing them beautifully and having magic happen. And the people that he talks to and gets to take the courses do better than he does. They do the courses with more sincerity and more eagerness than he does, because they see what has happened to him in recent years. Mm-hmm. And what has happened to him took a lot of patience, mm-hmm. a lot of patience. And I tell you that being a teacher of philosophy, being a teacher of our ideas, is a very demanding job, because you have to ask the simplest questions, and for the simplest questions you get the most interesting answers. What is your name, Ingeborg?
My name is Ingeborg Pukert.
Thank you. And you see how easy and how important that is? You see, I'm not asking you to be funny or to be cute and to say just Ingeborg when everybody else says Ingeborg Pukert, you know, but to say just Ingeborg is being cute. And that's not what we're here for. Of course, there will always be the little rascal. Everybody says their name. My name is Billy and Joe and Ann and Carolyn and Ellen and Dorothy and Sherwood and Sylvia and what have you. And then the little boy will come up and he'll say, well, my name is Anthony John Paul Marion George Henry David Thoreau, you know. And you say, wow, how do you remember it all? I don't. I make it up as I go along. Oh, hey, that's keen. That's keen, you know? But you see, he's honest. He's honest. And he's being cute, but he's honest. And you got to give him an H for honest. But I don't recommend that either. But the name of the game is honesty. The name of the game is listening to the question, answering it. And when you listen to the question and answer it, and listen to the question and answer it. We heard a young boy singing at the church the other night at the community choir, musicale. And he says, God, when I speak to you, where are you? Where are you, God, when I speak to you? Where are you, God, when I speak to you? And Ellen wanted to go up and say, within you, within you. Well, now, yes, the boy was sincere. The religion that he had learned was that the God was outside him, and he was praying with his folded hands to a God outside and never finding him. And nobody ever has found God outside of himself. They have found him in that secret place within. And there is where we all want to find him. And there is where we all want to know the presence and the power, is that secret place within. And so, if he were to ask Ellen, or Sylvia, or Ingeborg, or Dorothea, or me, if he were to say, how do I find God? Where is God? And I'd say, well, did God create you? Yeah. Did God create everything? Yeah. Is everything God? Yeah. Are you God? Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're God, then God must be in you. Oh. You see, if you carry the logic around, it's okay. But it's a hard way to do it. But sometimes you have to. And he says, well, if I'm God, then I've got to go within to find him. That's right. And that's what prayer is all about. Prayer and meditation and introspection is going within and listening to God within. Oh. And when you listen to God within, don't be surprised if God sounds just like you. Because that's the same person you're listening to. Mm-hmm. And when God starts talking to you, don't forget that the stuff that you have on the surface is all God, it's all good, but may not be what you want. Because he may tell you you're a sinner, and he may tell you you're evil, he may tell you you're worthless and useless. But then he'll also tell you that you're wonderful and you're fantastic, you're glorious and you're good. And just wait till the second chapter comes along, you know. And then the first chapter is your old garbage that you've been putting in there for a long time. And when the second chapter comes along and it says, you're wonderful, you're good, then believe it. You see, the Bible is a little different. The first chapter of the Bible, God did everything right, you know. And then the second chapter of the Bible, man rewrote the first chapter in his own image. And then he had God kicking Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Paradise and stuff. But the first chapter, there was no tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Adam and Eve were there the first instant, and they knew everything, and there was nothing to fight, nothing to run from. And you see, this is all part of a teaching program, all part of teaching. The Bible is a teacher, too. And Sylvia, what's 2 times 2?
4.
Sylvia, what's 273,000,000,000,000,000 times 1? And you would say 273,000,000,000,000,000 times 1. But you see, the thing is, you couldn't say that if you didn't know 2 times 2 is 4. If you didn't have the foundation. If you didn't have the foundation. So, I recommend to each of you that you take the Bible and rip out the first chapter of Genesis and memorize it, and eat it, and digest it, and learn it, because that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And everything else is just somebody else's opinion. The first chapter of the Bible was inspired, and the rest of it was inspired by the individuals who were teaching it or sharing it or giving it. And we'll go into that another time. But you're in school whenever you have your teacher around. And Ingeborg, where's your teacher?
Within myself.
Within yourself. So therefore, Ingeborg, you are what? You are always what?
God.
That's true, but you're always in what?
School.
You're always in school. I mean, look at what I'm pointing at. I'm pointing the sign on the wall. You're always in school. See, you're always in school. If your teacher is God, you're always in school, okay? Right, Dorothea?
Right.
Okay, and don't you ever, ever forget it. Because if you forget it, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. And the trouble is, then you begin to believe what the world tells you. Mm-hmm. You begin to believe that these things are, why me, oh God?
Yeah.
Well, because you put the cause in motion to bring about that effect. And if you're going to put that cause in motion to bring about that effect, well, that's the effect you're going to get. So, we did a little better today than I planned, but so be it. And I know that wonderful good is going to come out of this for all of you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.